Hey everybody, time once again for another movie retrospective, going back to the 1990s.
This is a good one. This is a good one.
Yeah, this is our first Terry Gilliam movie, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, 12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys.
And he also did Brazil, which is another good movie.
We have to do Brazil. Yeah. I also would like to do Time Bandits at some stage, because
I think I saw it, but I don't know it that well.
I love Time Bandits. Yeah. I saw that a million times when I was a kid. So yeah, we'll eventually get it. But this is our first Terry Gilliam movie. So like I said, doing 12 Monkeys today. Yeah. Kind of a mind fuck of a sci-fi movie. If you have not seen it, we're going to spoil the shit out of it. So if you haven't seen it, might want to
check it out. And
check it out before you watch this.
Yeah, the basic premise is a guy from the future goes into the past, which is in his past is a 1996? Well, yeah. They try to send him, I think, to 97 or 99.
But they try to send him to 1996, but they fuck up and they send him to 1990,
that's right. So he comes back a couple different times. This is Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis from the future is being sent back into the past to try to find out the source of a pandemic that wipes out the Earth. And mankind is now living underground in kind of a sterile, or a, you know, not really a sterile environment, but an environment that's separated from the virus. The virus kills humans, but it doesn't kill animals. So it's kind of evidently a Garden of Eden on the surface, but they can't surface. And Bruce Willis is playing a guy. What was his name again in the movie?
Cole,
that's right, yeah. Cole is actually a convict serving time. And that's who they're using to complete these missions and sending them back through like a primitive time travel. And pretty cool flick. So if you want to see it, go ahead and you can check out now, and then
because like I said, we're gonna spoil the plot, and we're gonna like maybe talk about some theories about what's going on in this
crazy ass time travel movie.
Because like I said, like many time travel movies, it's kind of like it kind of hurts your brain if you think about it too.
Yeah, it's got Mobius strips and loops in it, you know.
Yeah, and honestly, this is one of the few time travel movies. I know there are other ones. I think people have mentioned, Primer, which was kind of a more recent one. This is kind of one that adheres to a more, I guess, deterministic view of time travel.
Yes.
That it can't really be changed.
Right. So hopefully you've checked out now if you want to see this movie.
Because
we're getting into spoilers right now.
Yeah.
Shut it off. Okay.
So, because, you know, it seems like a lot of time travel movies, you know, Back to the Future most famously and stuff, that if you go back to the past and change a little thing, then the future will be wildly different because of butterfly effect and whatnot. Now, this kind of takes a different tack, and I think this is actually, if time travel was real, this is probably
more like
what it would be like.
Because anything that would have predated you would have already happened.
Yeah.
So your attempts at changing it failed, or your attempts at changing it happened, and you emerged in that universe already.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's deterministic.
Yeah, because otherwise it would cause, like, all sorts of paradoxes.
They've sent him back into the past to get a pure specimen of this bioweapon. If they have the pure specimen, they'll be able to cure it. They can't cure it because it had mutated so many times in the subsequent years that it's too hard. They can't fix it. But they think that they have the original strain, they would be able to make a cure for it.
Yeah.
So they're sending him back in time and to try to find this pure form of the virus, but they don't know where it came from. And Willis is sent back kind of like a scout. And he's been there before. Remember, he took some samples, you know, and he brought things back and saw a bear and shit. But it's pretty neat, I guess. I think really kind of the thing that drives this movie is the idea of an insane asylum. Because as soon as he goes back, he's acting strange, evidently. They throw him in a mental hospital. And he's in a fucking insane asylum. And for a minute, you don't know. When I first saw the movie, I kind of questioned whether or not he was actually crazy and wasn't a time traveler. But maybe he was an insane guy who believed he was a time traveler. So that's what you were seeing also.
Did leave some ambiguity on that score, because at one stage in the movie, and I mean, I know we're kind of all over the place and I kind of wanted to go through like point by point. But,
okay, we can go. Okay.
But what I was saying was that at one stage during the movie when he's hooked up with his psychiatrist, who's played by Madeline Stowe, he becomes convinced that maybe he actually is crazy and that he's not a time traveler.
Yeah.
You know, so even though I think ultimately he did really travel through time, they do leave it ambiguous that you could read it that maybe he really was just a crazy person.
But my take on it after watching it again recently is that, no, he's a time traveler.
Yeah. I think so as well. Yeah. Because, you know, what would be the point of it otherwise? Right. Although, like I said, I do like ambiguity like that in movies where it's like, oh, it could be, he's just a nut.
Too many things happen which that support the idea that, yes, he is a time traveler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this, okay, so very famously, the movie was directed by Terry Gilliam, although he did not write it. The screenplay was actually written by David and Janet Peoples. David Peoples wrote the screenplay, or at least an iteration of the screenplay for Blade Runner, so you know that you're in good hands. It's actually sort of loosely based on a short film from 1962 called La Jetée, which was a movie that was, you know, if you've gone to film school or anything like that, they usually show it in film classes. It was made out of completely out of still photographs. And it's kind of a post-apocalyptic Paris type of thing where people live underground and stuff. So that's where the idea for 12 Monkeys came from. So what we have in this, Bruce Willis playing Cole, like I said, it's set in 2035. And at this stage, you know, I think it was 5 billion people were killed by the virus. And the people that were left apparently had natural immunity, but they all had to move underground. Now, Bruce Willis, at the beginning of this, his character's name is Cole. He's in prison, but I don't think they ever tell you what he's in prison for. Like, what did he do?
Well, they said he had a bunch of stuff on his record for violence and sexual assault.
Yeah.
But this futuristic society that he comes from is not futuristic. It's kind of
steampunky looking.
Yeah, it's a dystopian.
Yeah.
I mean, they have the technology to send somebody back into the past. They can even send messages back into the past. But it looks pretty dirty and pretty grimy. It's not a clean, sterile future. It's kind of like, looks like the Nostromo out of damn Alien 1.
Yeah, it's all kind of beat up.
Yeah, or Dark World, or what was it called?
Dark City.
Dark City. Looks like something like that.
That's another movie we got to do.
Yeah.
That's kind of a really underrated flick. I feel like a lot of people haven't seen it, but it was actually pretty cool. One of the better movies in the 90s, because like I said, for some reason, the 90s, that whole decade, I'm just kind of like, there wasn't really a lot of movies I liked in that day. Although this one was good. This came out in 95.
And they don't seem to have really good computer technology. It's just kind of like the computer technology that they show in Brazil. Little bitty screens with a bunch of magnifying glasses and a bunch of old used television sets taped together. You know, that's kind of what their technology looks like. It's been reused and recycled like Blade Runner.
I feel like Terry Gilliam is less concerned with showing something looking like modernistic as he is...
Bizarre.
He just wants it to look weird and creepy and unsettling and off-putting.
Yeah, the movie knocks it out of the park, I mean, in terms of tone.
This is really is an amazing movie. Yeah. And like all the... This is probably my favorite... acting performance by Brad Pitt, who plays a crazy person.
when I saw this in my 20s, I thought the movie was kind of slow and tedious. I see it now, and I loved it. I liked it a lot better now.
This is one of those movies that you really have to watch it a bunch of times, because there's so, like, every single little detail, like, relates back to some other little detail, and it's just, like, this really intricate, like you said, it's like a Mobius strip of story. But yeah, so Bruce Willis, for some undisclosed, crimes or whatever, and he's in prison, and this little cadre of scientists with their little magnifying glass and whatever, they're telling him that, I guess they chose him because he had a really good memory.
Yeah, he can remember a bunch of long strings of numbers and stuff.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, well, we will give you a pardon if you go back to 1996 when the virus was first released on the Earth, and if you can find out how it got released and who released it.
Right.
Now, I think, from my understanding of the film, and I've seen it a couple of times, but, you know, like I said, you need to, like, really pay attention.
Yeah, and the reason why you got to pay attention is because some things happened out of order, because he's not the only one traveling through time. There's other people traveling through time, too.
Yeah.
And he goes through time several different... He travels through time several different times in the same time frame, generally. So, weird stuff happens. You'll see.
And like I said, if you think about it too hard, it will give you a thumping migraine.
Yeah.
But, as I said, so they're going to send him back. Now, as I understand it, I think the reason that they're sending him back to 1996, because they know that was when the virus was released. Now, they have part of a phone message from then.
Yeah.
That is kind of, like, messed up, but they heard 12 monkeys or something like that on there.
They had to piece it together. It was slightly garbled, not ordered. And it took. And they did piece it together. It was in order.
Yeah. But see, that's what kills me. Okay.
Yeah.
This is what freaks me out, is that you find out later on in the movie that that message was from him.
Yeah, in the future. Well, in the past.
In the past.
But he hadn't sent it yet.
Right.
You'll see.
So it's like, so...
It wasn't really from him. It was from his girlfriend. It was a message. He told his girlfriend to call, and she...
And she called, and
gave
she...
gave kind of a wacky answer, wacky message.
Yeah,
it was only partly right. It only had a couple of clues in it. But she was joking around. She didn't think the... She didn't think it was working. The time travel telephone message system that the people from the future somehow had tapped into the old landlines of the 90s.
Well, they had a particular voicemail.
Yeah, voicemail account. They could
future
access.
Future people could call.
Yeah, it was
and
weird.
The people would get it. But I think what ended up happening was that because it had been so long, like by the time they got the message, I think the tape would have decayed somewhat. So... it wasn't, like, super clear. Because they played him part of this message, which was Madeline Stowe's voice, you find out later on. And she, you know, you find out later why she left the message in this particular tone of voice. And he didn't know who she was at that time. But they're like, okay, well, she said something like, you know, the Army of the 12 Monkeys, this is where their location is. They're the ones who are going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, have a Merry Christmas or something like that.
All right.
So they decide to send him back to 1996 to see. And so for the first... like two-thirds of the movie, he's trying to find out this Army of the 12 Monkeys. They're the ones that are going to release the virus and all this other stuff. Now, significantly...
he tries to find it in 1990 because they sent him early by accident. Well, it wasn't there, though.
That's what I was just going to say. Right, I said significantly...
Yeah.
They mean to send it because the time travel, apparently, in 2035 isn't super accurate.
Yeah, they fuck up several
times. So they were going to send him to 1996, but he ended up in 1990 instead. So, in 1990, he starts talking about, hey, I need to find the Army of the 12 Monkeys, which didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm from the future, I have to stop, you know, I have to find this virus, or who releases the virus, or whatever. And then, so...
he has to use the phone.
Yeah.
Remember, he says, I gotta call this special number. And the psychiatrist let him call the number.
Yeah.
He was gonna call the people in the future, but... it rang and a single black mother of like six with kids in the kitchen's like, what? And she didn't understand what he's talking about.
Yeah, because number hadn't been set up yet.
And
right.
They didn't know he was in 1990.
Yeah, and the Army of the 12 Monkeys didn't exist yet either. Because he's like running around like looking for their
graffiti
or whatever.
He ran into the leader of the 12 Monkeys.
In the Insane Asylum.
In the Insane Asylum.
Who was played by Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Now, this is why... okay. This is why I'm starting to think that this entire movie is pretty much one entire closed causal loop.
Right.
That now
it's a tightly nested little package of things.
Yeah.
That all have to kind of happen.
And in that way, it's
a masterpiece.
Yeah. And honestly, and he even says a couple times... during it, because I think he says to the psychiatrist at some point, you know, she's like, oh, are you going to save us all from the virus or whatever, even though she didn't, like, believe him yet.
Yeah.
He's like, you can't change the past.
Yeah,
I can't save anybody.
Right.
I just came back here to get the virus so I can take it back to the future and we can find a cure and we can all live on the earth again.
Now, it didn't dawn on me at the time of watching the movie at the time, but later on we were talking about it, it dawned on me that how's he going to bring the virus back? Well, the only way I can think of you can bring the virus back is to catch it.
Yeah.
So I guess he was going to catch it, and then they were going to cure him, and then he would get his pardon, right?
See, I feel like the scientists, when they sent him back, I don't think they had ever had any intention. I think they just wanted him to find the person that released it, and then the scientist was going to take care of the shit.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Because I remember him... saying that he was supposed to bring a sample of it back.
Yeah. I don't remember if he said that in the movie, but...
Maybe I just imagined that.
Well,
but that's how I remembered it.
But spoiler alert. So he's, like, looking for the Army of the 12 Monkeys. Okay, so not only did them fucking up and sending him back to 1990 and him meeting Brad Pitt in the insane asylum, that actually gave Brad Pitt the idea for forming the Army of the 12 Monkeys. You know what I mean? Yeah. Later on. So it was his idea.
Brad Pitt got it from what's-his-name.
Right.
Yeah, from...
Cole didn't realize at the time. And then later on, you find out that the Army of the 12 Monkeys was not even the ones responsible for releasing the virus.
They were involved, though. They were kind of... Oh, wait a minute. No,
they weren't.
That's right. They weren't.
They didn't have anything to do with anything.
But they kind of fantasized about that, though, remember, a little bit? Because... Cole brought up the idea of the 12 monkeys and then using a virus to wipe out the earth. And remember that he kind of went, oh yeah, that's a good idea. Remember?
Yeah.
But it turned out in the end, he wasn't the one that did it.
No.
Another guy did.
Well, I don't think they had any intention of doing anything like that. The other people that were in the Army of the 12 Monkeys, they were just like animal rights activists. Yeah. They just wanted to release animals from zoos and stuff. They said later on that Brad Pitt had started talking about like wiping people off the earth and everything, but they thought he was crazy. But at the end, when they're doing their big thing and he kidnaps his dad, who's like the head of the virology lab.
Right.
And all they were going to do was release all these animals. Right. They weren't going to release the virus.
Yeah, it was a fake out. You thought they were going to release that virus. Because he was talking to him like he was going to.
Yeah.
But they actually just released all the animals.
It was like a red herring.
But then it turned out that, yeah, they were, he and his dad were involved. But there was a third guy that worked for
his
dad.
He was an assistant at the lab.
And he was the one that released it.
And here's another thing.
So actually finding the Army of the Third Monkeys. Third Monkey. Finding the Army of the 12 Monkeys actually did lead to finding who did it, in a way. Almost.
Sort of, yeah.
Almost.
I should note, too, that I think, and that maybe this is just my reading of the film, but the assistant who does ultimately end up releasing the virus on Earth, I think he also got the idea indirectly from Bruce Willis. Because check it. He goes back, Bruce Willis is sent back to 1990, gives Brad Pitt the idea about the thing in the asylum or whatever. Now, there is also a thing where he accidentally gets sent back into a trench in World War One, and he gets shot in the leg.
Yeah.
Now, he still has the bullet in his leg from World War One when he comes back and talks to his psychiatrist in 1996, which is one of the things that makes her start to believe that he actually is a time traveler.
Yeah.
Now, what ended up happening was that because she had talked to him in 1990 in the insane asylum, and then she ended up seeing a picture of the guy in the trench from World War One, and then she saw Bruce Willis in the photograph.
Yeah.
And so in the ensuing 6 years...
And naked Bruce Willis, too.
Yeah, in the ensuing 6 years, she started to think, hey, maybe there's something to this, and she had written a book about it. People that had like the Cassandra complex where they could see the future, but they were like, cursed with like no one believing them.
Yeah.
So she wrote a book about that, and you see the redheaded guy at her book signing and he starts like weirding out about, maybe we should wipe everybody off the earth because we're fucking it all up. And then she's like, yeah, whatever, bro.
So then you start looking at this movie in this way. Did the pandemic happen because they sent Bruce Willis into the past?
See, that's what I'm kind of wondering.
Had they not sent him to stop the pandemic, the pandemic never would have happened. Because the pandemic happened, you had to send Bruce Willis into the...
That's the
problem.
It's a closed loop.
That's the problem.
And the thing about it is that I'm not sure how aware they are, because I was reading something about this and I'm just like, oh my God, my head's starting to hurt. Yeah. But so there's this whole thing, like Bruce Willis during the whole movie, he has these dreams about being a kid in the airport and seeing a guy get shot and killed in the airport. Now, it turns out later on in the movie that's older him.
Yeah, he's seeing himself in the future.
He's seeing himself in the future get killed while he's chasing after the guy with the virus.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's nothing that could have been done to alter anything.
No. And another guy comes from the future, meets up with him in the bathroom at the airport before the, because he's tracking down the guy who's got the virus. and gives him a gun from the 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I think it was a Lamat revolver. It was hard to find now. And he tells him, he says, you can be a hero. You can, if you, you know, if you kill him, you'll stop the pandemic. And he tried, but that really doesn't make sense. I mean...
But see, I think that was destined to happen.
Right. You couldn't stop him because it had already happened. They told him he couldn't change
the past. Bruce Willis got shot because he had a gun.
Yeah, and then he got shot because he had a gun, and he saw... Man, it gets
so that guy had to come and give him a gun and go, hey, shoot that guy. But then the cops see Bruce Willis with the gun, and they don't see the other guy, and they shoot that guy.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any way, like I said, it's a closed causal loop.
Right.
It's causing itself.
Yeah.
It's like a Mobius strip, and you can't get out of it. Whether, I mean, I guess that, you know, the mission, okay. Now, is the mission successful or not? Because there's a scene at the end, like, now the guy, the virus releasing dude, the redheaded dude, he releases the virus, which is just in these vials, it's odorless, colorless, it's just a gas. So he's going through the
security, yeah.
And the guy's like, what's in all these vials? He's just like, oh, and then he opens it and he's like, hey, take a sniff, nothing in here. Yeah. So he released it in the airport. And when he says where what his itinerary is, if you paid attention earlier in the movie, that was the order that the virus had, you know, the cities that the virus had taken
over.
He starts flying around and taking it all over the world.
Yeah.
So you know that he's like, you know, the guy that's doing it. Now, so he's already released it in the airport, which I think it's in Philadelphia, right? Yeah.
I think it was.
I think it was Philadelphia. And so he gets on the plane. And then the very last scene of the movie is him sitting on the plane with the shit, with the vials and everything. And like I said, it's already been released in the airport at this point. And then one of the scientists from the future that sent Bruce Willis back to the past in 2035, she is sitting next to him on the plane. And she shakes his hand and says something about, airport shootings and stuff, and something about human extinction. And then he asks her, hey, what do you do? And she says, I'm in insurance. So I think that what they're saying is that now that they know who did the virus, she came back to get the virus.
To contract it. Yeah.
So she could go back to the future and they would have a pure strain of it right out of the vial.
Right.
Now, it's interesting to note, though, that Terry Gilliam, the director, did not want that scene at the end because he thought that it was like a happy ending and he did not want that. Right. He wanted it to end where you would just think it's this whole loop and they can't get out of it.
Right.
And they just have to keep, they're just like cursed to keep doing it over and over again. Like it's a deterministic universe. But I guess that the studio were like, well, can't you just like tack a little hopeful ending? Like maybe they'll cure it in the future at least. Cause like I said, they couldn't do anything about it in the past. It was going to happen regardless because it had already happened.
Right.
But so I think that you're meant to think from that last scene that she was going to get the virus and then go back to the future and go, hey, here it is. Well, and it then
makes,
work.
It makes sense. It makes sense, though, that the mission would eventually succeed because they were in the future with a time machine and an unlimited amount of people. They could just keep sending people back into the past until they got it.
That's the thing about a time machine. You got all the time in the world.
You got all the time in the world. And they were sending people back to him. And they sent him back several different times in different places. So eventually, with enough people and enough attempts, you would... You'd figure it out. So I think maybe putting that ending kind of does make sense.
Yeah. I can see that.
Because... let's say the mission fails and it doesn't have that ending, all right? They wouldn't have stopped in the future.
Right.
They would have said, well, what are we going to do next? We got a time machine, and we got thousands of prisoners.
You know, yeah, so
keep
it's
sending
like,
people back.
Pull out another one. We'll just send it back and try
it
again.
Yeah, so it makes sense that they would have tried again.
And then pretty soon, and really at several points during the movie, you're pretty much thinking that other people have come back from the future and are stuck in 1990 or 1996.
He keeps running into them.
Yeah, because he keeps running into people that said, hey, you're one of us. Or like that homeless guy that said, I pulled out my teeth so they can't track me.
Right.
You know,
and
he knew he knew who he was and stuff.
Some of the prisoners defected, pulled their teeth out and escaped into the past so they didn't have to go back.
Yeah, so so the implication may be that they've been sending people back and they messed up or...
Right.
you know, or they got stuck there.
There's at least a dozen of them that they lost track of, I would think, too.
Yeah.
Based on what they showed.
So,
you know,
I wonder how that, like, fits into the whole thing. Because, like I said, I was just watching, like, a video on IO9 where the person was, like, they were kind of theorizing that the scientists actually, it was either that the virus was released because they sent Bruce Willis back in time, or they actually sent him back in time to ensure that the virus was released because that's what they wanted, that they didn't really want to cure it.
I don't buy
all
that. It looked like they were trying to cure it to me.
It did, yeah.
I think them sending him back, even though he wasn't the first one, he was just one of the many that they sent back. He was the one that caused it. He happened to go to and end up in an insane asylum with a crazy motherfucker whose dad ran that damn virus institute.
Yeah.
And through that connection, they heard about his idea, the 12 monkeys, and the bioweapon, which got crazy assistant interested in that idea, and Bruce Willis' psychologist, who was writing the books about it.
Yeah, because it was his case that inspired her to write that book.
So he's realizing that this book that she's writing is about him, and it's about him releasing the virus.
Yeah.
So, eventually they sent back the wrong dude. That was Bruce Willis. He was the one that caused this series of events to make it happen.
This is going to make my head blow up. But I do think that that was Terry Gilliam's intention.
Yeah.
That the very fact that Bruce Willis was sent back in time ostensibly to find a pure thing of the virus was actually
it. He caused it to happen.
Ended up causing it to happen.
Right.
Well, not so much the fact that they sent him to 1996, but the fact that they fucked up and sent him to 1990.
And he ended up in an insane asylum.
And then he ended up in an insane asylum. I think that's that mistake.
Right.
And also the fact that they fucked up and sent him to World War I for a second, and then he got shot in the leg. Because, like I said, that was one of the things that convinced his psychiatrist that he was telling the truth, that he actually did travel through time. Yeah. So I think that their mistakes actually ended up causing the entire pandemic. But like I said, there was nothing they could do to prevent it at that point. It had already happened. So you couldn't change the past, right?
It's an old movie. It doesn't really, to me, feel like an old movie. At the time that it came out, it was difficult for me to watch because it was kind of ahead of its time, the way it was edited.
Oh, yeah.
I think. It's aged very well.
It really has. Yeah. It looks great. And like I said, I mean, well, the thing about Terry Gilliam is that, you know, like I said, he is not really worried about making shit futuristic. And I think I've said on the show a couple times before, it's like sci-fi is hard to pull off because if you make it look quote-unquote futuristic at the time that you make it, then 10, 20 years from now, it's going to look really, really outdated. So I think your best bet is to do something really stylized. And that's what Terry Gilliam does here. Like I said, it's very, like, it's used looking, it's beat up looking. It's kind of steampunky, like Victorian-y.
Well, it makes
kind of
sense.
It's like City of Lost Children kind of look.
It makes sense because he's coming from a post-apocalyptic future.
Yeah.
That's dystopian and made up out of junk.
Yeah.
You know, worse than Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Basically. So it was made, you know, the world that you saw was made out of early 20th century and mid 20th century junk.
Yeah.
And 1990s junk thrown into it, too. But even the television sets they had, a lot of them looked like they were from the 70s.
Yeah. I think that's why this doesn't look like
so it didn't really age
a movie from the 1990s. Right. Maybe the way, you know, other like more modernistic like sci-fi movies from the 90s, like, I don't know, Johnny Mnemonic or something like that would look really outdated. This does not, to me, it does not look outdated at all.
No.
I mean, you know, and the fact that it's such a cool premise, and as I said, it's sort of a time travel type of movie that they don't really do a lot of them this way. Like I said, they don't do like a lot of predeterministic, you know, like you can't change the past, you can't change, which like I said, if time travel, if we could ever do time travel, that's probably the way it really is.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be able to change anything.
Right, because I saw somebody talking about this on a comment section about this movie, and they were like, you know, if Einstein is correct and time is actually a dimension, as in like a fourth dimension, then you wouldn't be able to change anything in the past, present, or the future because it's all happening at once.
Right.
So I think that's kind of like where this movie is coming from. Like I said, it's not a thing where, oh, we'll go back to the past and change this one little thing and then the future will be different. It's not like that.
No, what would happen is you'd go into the past, you'd change a few things, and then you come back and be exactly the same because those changes were already in
were
play
already...
before you left.
Exactly. That's exactly
so
what this...
you change shit, but it won't change the course of anything.
Yeah.
You know
and
I mean?
Honestly, the fact that you changed something was already
in there.
In there.
Right.
That was already predetermined,
yeah.
Like at the beginning of the universe. So there's absolutely nothing, even if you think you're like, ooh, I'm going to do this different thing. It's just, you would have done that every single time.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this movie is coming from, that it's just like this endless, which is kind of what makes it, it's a weirdly sad movie. Like if you kind of know what's going on, you know what I mean? It's kind of sad, a little bit nightmarish. Like if you think about it too hard, because this poor guy, even though he may not be aware of it, he's kind of doomed to like live through the same thing over and over again. Like you see, he's the kid in the airport and he's seeing his adult self get shot and he's going to have to do that over and over again. Right. Because that kid's going to grow up.
Well, he didn't know that was him, though.
Yeah, that's true.
He didn't know that was him.
So that's,
he just remembered it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So,
as he was dying, and he saw the little kid there, they just showed you that the little kid was him seeing it happen.
Yeah, because he kept, like, all through the movie, he kept, like, having these visions.
He kept remembering it, right.
Of somebody getting shot in an airport, because it was super traumatic, like, when he
was
a kid.
Right, he didn't know it was him, though.
But he didn't know it was him. That's what I mean.
At the very end, he knew it was him.
Yeah, that would suck if he did know it was him. Because, like I said, that's what he didn't know. In the sense that, you know, you're watching the loop happen, like, as the audience of the movie, but the characters in the movie are not necessarily aware of it. They think that they have free will and that they're changing things by their actions and stuff, but from our godlike perspective, we are seeing that they're not able to change anything, that it's a foregone conclusion. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I think that that's kind of what that movie's coming from. So yeah, this is actually a really, really good movie. I feel like it's one of the better movies of the 90s, easily one of the best sci-fi movies of the 90s. It actually made, I think it was Terry Gilliam's most successful movie, made quite a bit of money. Because, you know, Terry Gilliam's movies are a little weird and sometimes they're not for all tastes and whatnot. I really like them, but I know a lot of people don't. but this one did pretty well, and like I said, I think it made more money than any of his other ones. So you know, check it out if you haven't, or you know, check it out again and see if you agree with our theories about what the hell is going on in this movie, if you can keep your head from exploding. And that will do it for our latest movie retrospective about Terry Gilliam's 12 Monkeys. Remember, if you like the show, like, share, subscribe on all your social media. And if you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or you can go to our blog, 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a little button in the sidebar where it goes to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. The PayPal button was actually not working for a little while, but it has been fixed now. So if you went there and pushed on it, we're like, nothing's happening. So it's fixed now. So, and remember, these movie retrospectives come out every Friday. And we also have 13 o'clock matinee, 3 new movies in the theater that comes out every Sunday. And our regular episodes come out every Tuesday. So check them out. We will see you next time. Bye.